This Week and Last, we're talking with the filmmakers behind the documentaries nominated for this year's Academy Award. One more to go. Tomorrow, the director of Gasland. Today, though, we want to focus on how these films get nominated in the first place, how winners get chosen. That comes amid surprise that Waiting for Superman, this year's most popular documentary, did not get a nomination. Davis Guggenheim directed a film which explores the state of the U.S. public education system and focuses a lot on reform efforts of then D.C. Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee.
You wake up every morning and you know that 46,000 kids are counting on you and that most of them are getting a really crappy education right now.
So you think that most of the kids in D.C. are getting a crappy education right now?
Oh, I don't think they are. I know they are. There's a complete and utter lack of accountability for the job that we're supposed to be doing, which is producing results for kids.
What makes a documentary work for you? Is it the politics, the issue, the style? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. NPR arts critic Bob Mongello joins us now in Studio 3A. He reviews films for All Things Considered. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's good to be here.
And Waiting for Superman was ahead in the Oscars promotion race, and more widely released than any of the others, among the highest grossing documentaries of 2010.
Who cares?
So what happened?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, like a few years ago, Batman was among the most seen pictures of the year, and it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. The logic really shouldn't be about commercial success. I mean, I understand why people want it to be. But documentaries especially are a rare breed of film, and they're voted on by a much smaller group of the Academy than the other films, and that is a big chunk of that. Do you know how this works?
Well, we did some of it last year, but remind us.
Okay. Basically, the documentary category is voted on by documentarians, people who make the documentaries themselves, and it's not voted on by the general membership. And so best documentary means a real respect from your peers, obviously, but it's a fairly small group of people doing the selecting. They narrow it down to about, I think it's 15 pictures, mm-hmm. and then they narrow it again down to 5. And Waiting for Superman made the first cut, but didn't make the second.
You've had, though, documentarians like Morgan Spurlock, now a member mm-hmm. of the Academy, saying, wait a minute, the requirement to vote on Best Pictures, you have to go see it in a theater as opposed to seeing it on a screener, which you can do, he says, when I'm voting for...
The King's Speech.
Yeah, right. Or any Best Picture.
Exactly. Basically, documentarians want their pictures to be seen on a big screen.
Well, everybody wants to be seeing their pictures
right.
on a big screen.
Well, I think there's a... It's up to them. It's what they want to do. At this point, you can now do it on a 60-inch screen at home without much trouble anyway. Personally, my reaction is that documentaries... The restriction is that you have to have seen all 5 of them and that you have seen all 5 of them on a big screen. And that could really limit how many people are voting in a very small group to begin with. So it is kind of a problem. Spurlock's right.
Even if you set up voted for the nomination, because those you could watch on a screener on your computer.
That's right.
Interesting. There are other categories that are questions that always surround documentaries. Among them, what is a documentary? What does it have to be eligible? And some speculate that, maybe Waiting for Superman didn't make it because of a scene that was staged, but there was a film nominated despite a lot of questions about its authenticity. Just yesterday we talked with Jamie DeCruz, the producer of Exit Through the Gift Shop, a film directed by the elusive British street artist Banksy, who appears in the film as a silhouette in a hoodie, and his face is completely blacked out and his voice is distorted.
Well, I'd never let anybody film anything before, but I said he could film me, but only my hands from behind, and on condition that I could check the tapes afterwards.
Well, whatever he said.
With the right effect, we could have Banksy here in the in the studio, and I could do his voice. I mean, the problem with that is you don't really know. And I think, as a practical matter, people have... When I saw the picture, no one was sure. I'm not sure that they're sure now. And the idea that Banksy might come and accept his award...
In what kind of a tuxedo, we wonder.
Exactly. Well, a hoodie, presumably. But it becomes pretty tricky. I think that... My own personal feeling is that a documentary, like almost any other kind of picture, ought to take you on a journey, that you ought to learn something that is kind of remarkable. And the pictures that were nominated all do that. I mean, one way or another. With Waiting for Superman, I felt less like that was true. And I think that's part of the reason that that the documentarians probably put it aside.
And most of these films are very much issue movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, the one that really moved me, and I just watched it again last night, is Wasteland, which is just, what an exquisite piece of filmmaking. And it's not just about making garbage into art. It's about the people who work in this incredible landfill in Brazil, and it's just emotionally wrenching. It's a beautiful picture.
This is Lucy Walker's film, where she follows the Brooklyn-based artist, the Brazilian-American artist Vic Muniz, as he begins an unorthodox art project in his former homeland.
What I really want to do is to be able to change the lives of a group of people with the same material that they deal with every day. And not just any material. The idea I have for my next series is to work with garbage.
And I will agree with you that the people, the pickers, are fantastic and fascinating. I honestly didn't think of it as much of a film, to tell you.
Oh, my God. I was so moved by it. Maybe you had to see it on a big screen.
Could have been. I saw it.
Wouldn't that be something?
On my TV set at home. Let's go get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Michael's on the line with us from San Francisco.
Hi. I would like to say that what I like in documentaries are basically the there are so many documentaries that we can see. But I want to see the visuals, the sound, the presentation to be very, very of a high caliber. I also would like, usually docs have a lot of interviews. But what I don't like in many docs is that we see the point of view of the person making the documentary. Instead of presenting us the various sides and complexity of an issue, they tend to make many documentarians want to present their view.
You want even-handed. That's so 10 years ago.
And that's so pre-Michael Moore.
Yeah, I think what's happened lately is that documentaries that push an agenda, that have a point of view, have proven very popular at the box office. Michael Moore's pictures, all of them, and An Inconvenient Truth being terrific examples of that.
And this year's nominee along those lines might be the film Inside Job.
What fraction were from Wall Street?
Of the higher-end clients, probably 40 to 50%.
And were all the major Wall Street firms represented? Goldman Sachs?
Lehman Brothers. Yeah, they're all in there.
So that was a Wall Street prostitute speaking about some of her clients in Charles Ferguson's film Inside Job, with the gotcha editing and the point of view of Michael Moore.
And makes you so mad by the end. Although the style is not really of Michael Moore, because Michael Moore is doing a lot of this funny.
Yes.
And this is trust me, not funny. I mean, this is, you get angrier and angrier watching this picture, which is, I think that's a legitimate point of view for a filmmaker to take, especially when he's working in the aftermath of the biggest economic collapse in the world's history in 70 years.
Let's get another caller in. This is Carol. Carol with us from Hot Springs in Arkansas.
Hi there. I am in the home of the oldest documentary film festival in the United States. We are celebrating our 20th anniversary this year.
Well, congratulations.
Yes, thank you. And I would say that what I look for is the honesty and the passion. And we get we screen about 100 films during our festival each year, 120. And we do get complaints, as this young man said, about not even-handedness, or what people don't consider even-handedness. But what I love about ours is we don't do awards. And I have noticed over the past several years the change where the gentleman that's your reviewer, that they are doing feature-length films now, because that's how they can get commercial success. In the past, we would screen films that were 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 22 minutes or whatever, and you see fewer and fewer of those. But what we do see here, and what I love about it, is that the filmmakers will come, the directors will come, And they like to be part of it and be with the audience. So they come and they screen their film, and then they take, we have Q&As, we have workshops and what have you.
And that happens at a lot of the festivals, Bob Mondello, but, you
yeah.
know.
The kind of wonderful thing, I mean, frankly, as a critic, that's one of the things you love to do is to get to talk to the audience a little bit, too, because we don't ordinarily get out among the public.
Well, the difference I see in what you're talking about in films these days is, as I say, the need for it to be a commercial success.
Yeah, well, I think
they're much longer than they used to be.
You're right, and sometimes that is they're extended beyond the real length of time that you need to articulate something about a subject. On the other hand, I can understand. I mean, you know, there are so many venues for the shorter films now on television in a variety of different channels.
Yes.
That there are other places that these pictures can play.
But the and Carol, thanks very much for the call, and continue good luck to the Hot Springs Film Festival.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
But the there are a lot of festivals, for example, Sundance, where if your documentary wins at Sundance, and I think the entry this year that falls into that category is the film about the platoon in Afghanistan, Restrepo.
To my family, I never really told them much until about halfway into the deployment. I didn't tell them when Moto died. I didn't tell them when Sergeant Padilla lost his arm. I didn't tell them when Pisa got shot. I didn't tell them when Restrepo got killed. And then when Restrepo got killed was a few days before my mom's birthday also. So I had to suck it up when I called my mom on her birthday.
It's specialist Misha Pemble-Belkin talking about his experiences in Afghanistan. Interesting, that film got nominated. Another film about Afghanistan did not.
You're thinking The Tillman Story.
Yeah.
Which is also a terrific picture, and which made me, in many ways, angrier than this one did. That one is about, the Tillman Story is about the cover-up during the last administration of the events surrounding Pat Tillman, the professional football player's death in Afghanistan. This one is they spent close to a year in the field with these men, and it shows. You feel as if there is an intimacy in Restrepo that you're just sort of astonished that you could get. And actually, that's one of the strengths of Wasteland as well, because they spent a year or almost 2 years making the picture. You sense that the filmmakers and the their subjects bonded in a way that is certainly unusual in what we see in television and things like that, in other forms of documentary.
At our website, you can check out our interviews with, so far, four of the documentary filmmakers nominated for the Academy Award this year. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. We're talking with NPR arts critic Bob Mondello. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Sue on the line. Sue with us from San Francisco.
Oh, hi. You know, I like documentaries that are even-handed, although I know that they're kind of hard to come by. But I just have to say that Superman movie that didn't get nominated, I'm glad it didn't. I didn't see the movie, but I saw the Oprah Winfrey episode on the film, and it was so one-sided, so much against the public schools. One of the filmmakers literally said that 95% of all problems in the schools were the results of bad teachers. And right away, that told me that this was not a good movie. And I since found out that the filmmakers left out lots and lots of information about teachers and public schools. They didn't show any of the good, successful public schools in the film. So I'm glad it wasn't nominated, and I hope that filmmakers try to make their documentaries more even-handed. And I'll just take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Sue, thanks very much. To be fair, every documentarian leaves a lot of material out of their 90-minute film.
And also, it's not entirely fair to judge that. I'm not a big fan of that movie, let me just say that. But I don't think it's fair to judge it without having, you know, seen the whole thing. The portions of it that they show in interview shows are going to be, by of necessity, very short and very one-sided. But I kind of agree with you overall that the picture was, it's not that it was biased, it's that it was weighted in a way that felt false to me. Mm. And not false vis-a-vis the facts, but false in a storytelling, in a narrative way, that it was frustrating to watch in that respect.
A lot of people commented on the necessity or possibility of commercial success. This is relatively new in the documentary field, I guess, going back to Michael Moore's success over the past decade or so, unless you want to go back to Robert Flaherty.
Right, I was going to say, was it Nanook of the North?
Nanook of the North and Man of Erin. But in any case, how has that changed the industry that all of a sudden you can make a profit with these films?
Well, chances are that you won't. My presumption is that what really drives a lot of filmmakers is the grants that allow them to make the films in the first place. And those are frequently coming from television stations or television networks that show this kind of thing. And a lot of people who do it, I think, do it for that. The idea that you can go beyond that is obviously very attractive, and it spurs a certain kind of film, which is always going to be very, very ideologically pointed, right? That isn't, by any stretch of the imagination, everything that's out there. And some of these pictures are just good stories. I mean, I keep coming back to Wasteland. It is absolutely my favorite of the bunch. But Wasteland is a story that it would never occur to me to tell that doesn't seem to have an ideological point in quite the same way as the other pictures, and that I just thought it just blew me away. I really felt like I'd gone someplace I would never otherwise have gone.
To be fair, neither Bob Mondello nor I have seen Gasland.
Ah, that's true.
The last of the films that we're going to be featuring, so join us tomorrow when we talk to the director of Gasland, which is about fracking. We'll explain that tomorrow when we come back with the director of Gasland, one of the five films nominated for the Academy Award for Best Feature-Length Documentary this year. Bob Mondello, NPR arts critic and reviewer of Films for All Things Considered, joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for your time today.
Always a pleasure.
We'll also be talking tomorrow about the challenges of single mothers. A new Pew survey shows a surprising number of Americans view single moms as bad for society. Join us for that conversation as well. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.